Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 132 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening. This week I have a fun interview with Brett Urin, creator of Torso Bear Yarns from Toyberg. It has some similarities to certain other toy films, but on the other hand, it's a lot more adult and a lot more interesting as far as reading goes. It's a Kickstarter project that I'm sure you're going to want to support, so I talk with Brett and all kinds of good information comes out, including how to support it and how you'll get a chance to read it yourself. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I'm talking today with Brett Urin, creator of an interesting project called Torso Bear, and some other good things in there, and lots of good British people writing this thing. So how are you doing today, Brett?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, Wayne. It's good to finally talk after a couple of emails back and forth.
Yeah, that's the way these things go. Seems like we have to set things up. Well, why don't we go ahead and just start right off by talking about what Torso Bear is all about. Well, how did this come to be, and what kind of project is it?
Torso Bear is kind of the end result, really, of 7 years of bashing away at several personal projects, just trying to get them out into the world and figuring out from the bottom up how this whole comics thing works. I mean, it's an anthology now, but it did start out as just a little sideline, a short story in a Norwegian digital anthology called Otra, which the now Torso Bear co-editor, Glenn Moen from Norway, actually edited the original four as well. It was the one thing that I had managed to do that had garnered not a mixed response, but something overly positive. So, you know, as soon as you have something like that where people seem to take a shine to it, and you just got to run with it, and that's what I did. It seems to have gotten out of hand a little bit.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, that's great. Now, why don't you explain to people who Torso Bear is to start with?
Well, Torso Bear is kind of a sort of, it's a description, really, of what the basic elements are. It's a murder mystery set in a world of toys. It was a chance, really, to try and find a way of doing some quite dark police procedural stories, but without necessarily going the whole hog as in terms of gore and sexual imagery, swearing, that sort of thing, to try and make something as grim and affecting as possible without having to resort to anything too much out there. I mean, at page four of the original story, we come across beheaded and dismembered teddy bear torso in the middle of a rainy alley, and because that's such a nice, warm, fuzzy thing from your childhood, I was hoping, and it seems to have turned out right, that that's quite an effective image.
Mm-hmm. Well, over here in the States, of course, that kind of thing is going to make people go bonkers because, you know, and probably does the same thing over in the UK. But, you know, teddy bears are beloved little creatures, you know, and you see one dismembered, you're going to go, ah. Of course, that's probably the effect.
Yeah, I was trying to kind of make a statement with it, and not in a cheesy kind of just trying for any gimmick. Mm-hmm. Any kind of like big sale there based off of that or at all. It all ties into a bigger theme, which is sort of the loss of innocence, mm-hmm. in that no matter what happens to you in life, whether things turn out right for you in the end or not, you're going to have seen some stuff or dealt with some difficult stuff that's going to leave a mark on you. Mm-hmm. No matter how sunny you started out to begin with, as, you know, Ruxby Bear does as a, you know, a rookie cop coming in, he thinks he's going to protect all toys and keep Toy Burger happy, cheerful, sunny, and kind of candy-smelling place, but soon finds out it's not quite like that, really, on the ground for most police officers.
Mm-hmm. No, the funny thing is, of course, if anybody remembers Toy Story, this is not Toy Story. Do not expect Toy Story going into this. Expect something a little more mature, shall we say, as to how things go.
Yeah.
And we need that kind of thing, to be honest with you. You know, it's great to have Toy Story, and believe me, I love it. But every once in a while, you want to see something a little different. And that's one of the things I really like about this, is that it's very different from what we're used to. So very cool stuff. Now, my understanding as an anthology, you're the editor of the anthology?
Absolutely. Along with Glenn Moran, who I mentioned had previously edited me on the original Torso Bear story. It was partly a couple of decisions, one of which was I'd been doing personal projects up to that point with some kind of measure of success, but you know, nothing so much as would be able to at least make the leap into the sort of mainstream of the indie circuit. And finding that people are at conventions and indeed on the boards online are a lot more collaborative. And that seems to be the strength of it, more or less, that you sort of, you know, you're leaning on each other to help each other out through and get books out there. And many of the people that I'm in the groups with, like Jeff McCumsey and Jason Copland, are all starting to really branch out and get some work with Marvel and, you know, other such people like that. And it's through that little network that you build things up. So I wanted to try my hand at some of that sort of thing. And also, I've got an 18-month-old daughter now. You can't be doing your own 200-page graphic novel anymore. You've got to try and work smart as opposed to just work hard into the night every night.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what family is all about.
Yeah, totally.
They keep you busy so you can't do the things you'd prefer to do. I can't say that. They keep you busy so that there's something else that you could be doing instead of doing this other stuff. So now, how many stories are actually in this? The actual name of the book is called Toys Torso Bear Yarns from Toy Burg.
Yeah.
And how many stories are in there now? 11?
Yes, it is 11 story. We've actually got a stretch goal on the Kickstarter at the moment to, at least in the print edition, get an extra little short story in there as well from one of our colorists, John Scrivens. 11 stories from everybody from Cy Dethan, who's a British guy who wrote Cancer Town and The Indifference Engine for Marcosia. Brockton McKinney, who's M-Theory is on Action Lab, and a whole host of other guys. I think it's 8 writers in total, 11 stories as we sort of change up the teams a little bit. And, there are loads of other people who have just come in to do a couple of things, like Sean Aldridge, who's Vic Boone, I think was People's Choice on IGN 2011. He's just come in to letter 3 pages of Jake Young's story, Sour and the Sweet. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of chopping and changing and different styles in there. And that was the idea, really, to look at Toy Burg from as many angles and as many perspectives as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, I like one of the catchphrases for it. It says, in the fluffy world of Torso Bear, not all toys play nice. Which I liked. I thought that was a great one. Now, the reason I mentioned Toy Story is because there is one similarity between what you're doing and what Toy Story talked about, and that's what happens to toys when we're not playing with them, basically.
Toy Story, I mean, I probably had more influence on this than I would probably care to admit at the time. And looking back at it now, very definitely Roger Rabbit. Who Framed Roger Rabbit, with its noir leanings, very obviously led to this. So, in essence, is sort of an amalgamation of the two in its inception. But, you know, going forward from there, just that tagline, you know, some play toys don't play nice. That just sort of brings in the childhood playful element and the noir elephant element, and, you know, and puts them together. Actually, to speak of elephants, there is an old tin elephant in the story called Nelly. It gets his own story in Glenn Moyne's The Collector, which is going to be a really nice little dark tale to go on. I mean, Toy Story still is very much, as well as Roger Rabbit, based in the real world to some extent. We're tried very much to keep Torso Bear at a distance from those, was to make Toyburg an actual living, working city where everything from, you know, the basic housing to streets and municipalities are all made up of playthings, toys, building blocks, Legos, things like that, to try and give it its own meta existence. Playtime or being played with by humans is very much a sort of semi-religious experience for the toys. They experience it as sort of a waking nighttime thing that they only have a vague recollection of, kind of like when you feel like you can't move when you're asleep and there's something else there in the room with you. So, you know, they're not exactly aware that they're playing playthings. Some things filter through, of course, but, you know, it's still a largely unwritten mystery for them.
Now, is this kind of a – do you have an overall arcing story going on? Or is this basically we get to see the Toyburg from different perspectives? What's the way that this whole thing comes together? What's the overall look for the book?
The outlook for the book is that Ruxby Bear, there is an overarching plot for him with some room, I think, for volume – a possible volume two. There's definitely been talk of that. So he's going to follow his case through as far as he can take it, no matter where it takes him and his partner, Officer Hasbro, too. But in between that, I've tried with the anthology to sort of pace things and let some other, you know, perspectives in, some other little shorts in between Ruxby's main overarching plot to sort of expand on some themes. Particularly like gunplay, for example, or family, or the nation of Kieran Squires has a very good story which sort of addresses the nature of racism or, you know, or separatism in society by taking the example of knockoff toys. Now, I don't know if you've ever done any Google search or seen any kind of knockoff toys on, say, BuzzFeed or something like that. Some of them are heinously ridiculous. One he found online is called Star Knight, and it's basically a Darth Vader knockoff on what looks like a mid-US police cruiser motorcycle. For some reason, just mash the two together, the two are fused in the middle. Makes no sense. I think it comes from India. And they have a whole host of amazing things, like Thomas the Tank Engine Transformer. They're like the Constructicons, you build this enormous robot out of various Thomas the Tank Engine characters. Or there's a five-pack of Justice League characters that happen to include Shrek, Superman, and Noddy, I think, as well. It's some really bizarre stuff. But, you know, you're addressing a sort of social issue there and maybe some, you know, difficult things that are resurfacing again now. It could be current, it could not, but then there are other things like Cy Dethan's story, Some Assembly Required, which just looks into what happens to toys when their normal career is done with. So the focus of the story there is an ex-He-Man type villain called Snaplock who makes his way in the world now by being a PI. So he knows the dirty corners of Toyburg and where the old villains hang out and stuff like that. There are surprisingly more angles and corners to this than I thought there were. And that's the beauty of bringing on those other writers. They can find all those little places within your framework that you didn't even know were there.
That's cool. But of course, that's the whole thing about bringing in and having creative partners and stuff like that, is they can make suggestions that makes the whole project better. Right. Not to say that you wouldn't come up with something good, but, you know, sometimes you think, I would never have thought of that.
Yeah.
does make things good.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely no doubt about it. There have been so many times where I've picked up somebody else's script, and not with any kind of sinking feeling of, I wish I'd been that creative, but just pure excitement. Particularly, one of the first ones I got in that we just knew we were going to say yes to, me and Glenn, was Cydeath and Scrip, because the twist in the final act is just so good and so perfectly representative of that whole 80s toy theme that I think it's going to bowl people over, and also, you know, they'll realise maybe they should have seen it coming a mile off. And because it walks that wonderful line, many of the stories of the book, because all this stuff is already familiar to you. If you've grown up with cop shows and police procedurals, as many of us have now, you know the tropes almost off by heart. It's not to say there isn't place to explore with that, but you know them so well that you just slip in. It's familiar. And once you're in that familiar territory, you're able to do some slightly different things that only you can do in a world of toys that deviate from that. So it sort of sets you up, lulls you in nicely, and then is ready to spring surprises on you.
Well, Cy, of course, I've interviewed him in the past, and I've read some of his stuff. The one that always stands out to me when you talk about surprises is his book Slaughterman's Creed, which, like, about three-quarters of the way through or two-thirds of the way through, there's this huge pivot that takes place. And if anybody hasn't read that, I would highly recommend it. And, you know, he'll do that kind of stuff in a story. You'll think you'll know where you're going, and then he will just derail that whole train of thought and basically put you on another path. So that's kind of funny. Hearing that, I'm really going to be anxious to read this book, because it's his stuff as well as the others. Because, you know, that's the kind of thing we need with toys. Anything's really possible. So you've got writers and artists who are making that very thing happen in your book. So that's a lot of fun.
It has been an enormous amount of fun. We've been really lucky in that most of the people have been online quite religiously throughout the process. So from script pitching all the way through artwork discussions, we've got a Facebook group where it's almost like a writer's room for a cartoon show, say. Everyone's giving their opinions or making suggestions on, you know, even down to minute things like, you know, color choices or, you know, whether that particular figure should have the armatures on the arms where you can see where the pivot points would be to make it more like an action figure. And all these little details and, you know, suggestions feed off, everyone's feeding off of everyone else. So whereas, you know, in any other situation, you know, Cy is quite rightly so a unique writer in the field for doing that sort of thing. That, you know, sort of collective energy, and he's, you know, fed into that, and it's fed back in. Everyone has been brought up in their game, I think, by having that atmosphere where everybody can, you know, do little things to make each other's work better.
Very cool. Now, one of the panels that I was able to see has two characters that fascinate me, and one of them, of course, is Snaplock, and the other one is it pronounced Hasbro?
Yeah. As close as I could get to that without being sued, I guess, really.
I was going to ask you that.
Hasbro is he's a toy from another time, basically. Kind of a bigoted old guy, actually, which we do explore further into the book in Janos Honkanen's story, The Big Wind-Up, which, again, takes us to another era of Toyberg, where you've got your old wooden and early stuffed bear toys in sort of a 1920s New York, with your bears as the Irish coming over in steamships kind of way, and then the wooden men are the old guard of toys. So he's from that other generation. It's nice to be able to explore, even, you know, in a world of toys, you wouldn't think there is a generational gap, but it's still a very human thing, because there have been generations of human children. There are obviously generations of toys.
Now, one of the things that fascinates me, you in that title that I mentioned, you talked about the fact that not all toys play nice. Are there toys that actually play nice in this thing?
Yeah. And then there are some pleasant characters, you know, toys that are just trying to get on in the world. Even, you know, some of the cops, like Officer Nelly, the old tin elephant. He's a stand-up guy. He just, you know, he knows some toys are finding it hard to make, you know, the amount of buttons they need to every night. Some of them turn to crime, but he's well aware that sometimes some of them have got no choice. So he tries to be even-handed with it. There are just some toys that are in the background, like in Yanis' story, there are some that work in the candy cotton spinneries, which are, you know, big industrials. So they're just working teddies, working stiffs. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing much more to them than that. There are some that are just victims of circumstance, like Ruxpy's little son, Wellington Bear, who he has at home, and is a character we'll meet on later on, is Mattel, his estranged wife, who is a club singer. Okay. Ostensibly the star of the story in the middle of the book. She sang for buttons, she unstitched my heart.
Okay, that's going to be good. Because these all stories sound really creative as far as, you know, thinking about toys and you know, interacting with them. Because we all wonder, you know, and this is what Toy Story made a lot of money off of, was what do they do when we don't see them? And, you know, what you're doing in there is you're moving in a slightly different direction. It seems like you're going in what happens when they're not used anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a few stories throughout the book that it sort of suggests what might possibly happen to toys that are either unused or left to kind of go to seed. It's suggested during the book that there are clinics, haberdasheries, that you can go into, and if you have the buttons on you, you can buy yourself some spare parts or get a kit repaired. Some parts for old wooden toys aren't really getting made anymore, and that's with the encroachment of plastic toys. And there are some digital devices starting to come into the world of Toyburg as well, as more kids get your tablet computers or smartphones, etc. So there's a feeling for some wooden toys that the world is moving on, and they're sort of being left to rot, essentially. So there are those anxieties there, and I think that comes with age as well. That at least feels true. I didn't write it in that way. It's just something collaboration we've all sort of gravitated towards.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say that sometimes what the toys go through, we as human beings that are associated with them go through the very same thing, so we can relate to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that Toy Story got right, and not to go back to it again too often, lest Disney come for me, what Toy Story, and particularly Toy Story 3, I think everyone can agree has got right, is that your toys live a life with you. You know, they're there to serve their purpose throughout your life, and they sort of grow and change and are passed on with you. They have definite eras in their life like you do. So to try and make toys live out their lives in a city in that way is a reflection of people. I'm trying, at least with Torso Bear, it seems to be that we've just naturally hit upon this reflection. The toys are living their lives very much like us, but face their own particularly skewed brand of problems.
Well, one of the things I've enjoyed too, and I got to see several of the panels I mentioned previously, there are some variations in the art that are kind of fun. The police car, instead of saying police, says police on it, P-O-L-E-E-Z, which I thought was kind of cute. Very cartoon-looking like. But then you go to the other panel, which I mentioned earlier, was the one with the Hasbro and Snaplock. It almost looks like a regular comics panel in the way that it does. So you've got a lot of variation in the art as well as the story. I think that's one of the things that's going to really draw people to this book.
Oh, absolutely. I've heard it said many times that anthologies can be great purely because if you're not enjoying something about the story you're reading right now, it doesn't matter, because there'll be something that you probably will like coming up in a minute. Partly also having that variety in the artwork, I think, just hits upon the core of what Toyburg, the city, is about even more. We're talking about perspectives. Everyone loves their hometown, say, but they'll think of it in a different way. They'll see life differently. And for each character that you have throughout the book, they all see the world in a familiar sense, but everything's all different. As you say, that Snaplock story is very comic book-esque, but treats the characters in that kind of hard-boiled way that you see, from the very get-go. Whereas someone like Saoirse Towler's artwork for the big wind-up is very much like a traditionally painted, drawn, penciled children's book, which mm-hmm. sort of takes it back to classic children's book stories that you would have had perhaps before a lot of comic books, or at least modern ones, came into the fore. So it's mm-hmm. almost like the art reflects what the story is doing at that particular time, or the type of story it is. Me and Glenn were very careful to try and do that. I mean, of course, Cy and Pete have worked together before, and they've just naturally fallen into that. But selecting mm-hmm. the rest of them and try to be very careful as to who gets what, to mm-hmm. Really make sure that everything fit its particular theme.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm dying to read it, I'm the way that you're talking about it. It sounds to me like there might even be more stories from Toyberg that we might see after this edition comes out.
We would absolutely love to. Not only have some of the writers, such as Cy and Janos, have said they've already got something in the back of their mind that would like to take the characters they have further. Mm-hmm. There is definite setup for Ruxby to have some more adventures. And there were about 35 pitches, maybe more, initially to the book, and some mm-hmm. stuff that we really would have loved to have included, but just didn't fit mm-hmm. in with the rest of the things that we'd already selected. It's still, this week, I got a couple of messages from artists who would have been interested in working on something with it, but just missed the boat. So... Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty much on the cards. There's enough passion there, and there's certainly enough excitement from us in the core team to try and bring another volume of Toyberg Adventures to people.
Looking forward not only to this one, but that one as well. So you've got good stuff going on there.
We are as well. Can't wait to see what each other come up with now.
Mm-hmm. Now, the important part here, we have to get to the part of how to access the book. How many pages are going to be in this volume when it's available?
It's going to be 104 pages internally. We've got some pinups and additional things that are going to go in there.
Now, of course, the important thing here that we need to get to is the Kickstarter part. you've started as a Kickstarter part, and my understanding is, as a project, you've started up very well.
Absolutely. I mean, with Kickstarter, there's always sort of a bell curve to these things, but we're lucky in this past week we've hit just about 50% of the funding, which is absolutely blew me away. Had such a warm reception so far. We're very pleased about that. That being said, though, we're always trying to come up with new ways to get people involved. At the moment, if you're a backer and you refer someone on to pledge and they tell me that they've referred to you, you get a free art print, even those that share socially, if we get a new pledger and they say they saw it on somebody's tweet, say the person that got a tweet will get mentioned in a thank you of the book. So with Kickstarter, you're almost always running, mm-hmm. you're constantly on a treadmill or hanging onto the back of a moving vehicle. You've just got to make sure you keep running.
Well, of course, if you get more than your goal, that wouldn't be a bad move.
it would be lovely. Yeah. We do have some mm-hmm. plans for stretch goals, such as John Scriven's stories. It's a little two-pager. It's about Lego guys, sort of a construction team, but with an added twist to it. We're going to go for some hard copy editions of the book if we raise a certain amount. Past that, we've been talking to the person that's making our plush toy rewards, who are making some handmade toys of Ruxby Bear, to actually maybe, just for the heck of it, if we get enough money, we'll do something ridiculous and actually make a little dismembered teddy bear or so.
Okay. Now, of course, if one goes to Kickstarter.com, how do they get to your project?
If you just click through to comics and arrange by newest, we should be in there. It's only been a week down. You might have to go halfway down the first page. We were a staff pick, so you could find us from the staff picks page, or just tap Torso Bear, Torso and Bear, no space between, into the search column, and it's the only one with anything approaching that name.
Now, what's the last day of this of the project? Because we want to make sure people get in there before the last day.
Yeah, of course. It's July the 1st is the last day, which is exactly 3 days before my birthday. So you're hoping for a nice present, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you a good birthday present by making the project come to your
fingers crossed.
That'd be great. So we're really looking forward to this project, Brett. Sounds like a lot of fun. Now, are there other things that you're working on that we should be aware of?
I've been working with John Scrivens on his book Little Terrors, which is ostensibly about a mystical apocalypse. So you've got a zombie invasion, but it's of the sort of red moon rising, everybody's sort of melts or mutates kind of variety. And it's an origin story about that actual event date. And it was fun to do some body horror stuff again after doing the cute, you know, torso bear bit. So it's sort of a break between phases of the project. Other than that, if you go to adventuresincomics.com, I did a little 2-page short with the Apes and Capes writer Gráinne McKenty about a goldfish plotting world domination. before that, we just this winter finished up a little one shot of a sort of mini comics mini series I've been doing called The Veil. The one shot's called I Don't Know What I Did Last Summer, and it's about the group of characters, you know, wizards and sort of Cthulhu type creatures, but in their teenage years. So, you know, going crazy, you know, getting drunk, meeting some girls, etc. But they're going to a stag party in Ireland.
Okay, well, that sounds intriguing. So one of the things I was really glad to be able to promote this project, because sometimes over in the U.S., we don't get to see a lot of the U.K. books, and there's a very unique sensibility to comics that you all bring that can be really enjoyable, and I liked it a lot, so I'm very happy to be able to let folks here in the U.S. know about this project and get onto it. So is there any chance that this Toyberg is going to show up in, like, say, Diamond distribution and things like that, going to actually hit the stores over here in the U.S.?
Well, I think no matter what happens, we definitely want to at least put it out on Comixology, you know, to get some of the audience going. Of course, we'd love it to be in print. So whilst we're kickstarting this, I mean, it's primarily for a short first print run, and paying off some of the staff working on it that are actually freelancers that do it for a living. So what we're doing at the same time as that is getting some sample pages together, such as you've seen, and sending off with completed pages to publishers. So, so far today, we've been in contact with one of the editors at Titan, one at Archaea that I originally pitched one of my other books to, and Humanoids as well, which some people may not know. But they're of a Europe-based publisher, but they publish an awful lot of Moebius's works, such as the Incal and things like that. So, you know, strange and unusual publications are kind of their forte, and we just thought it would be, you know, good to give them a heads up on that.
Sounds good. Well, Titan's trying to get a good foothold over here in the U.S., so that might be a good place.
It would be. And, you know, fortune being what it was, there's actually a gentleman that my current British publisher for The Veil has taken on a book of at the moment, called David Leitch Conquers the – well, no, Saves the World, sorry. And David Leitch himself is actually staff at Titan. So it is one of those things. Sometimes things just fall into place. So whether that comes to anything is another question. But, you know, having that foot in the door – or that name, you know, quite a lot of times in this business, it is very much about who you know, not necessarily what you know.
Well, it sounds like you've got a real success on your hands, and it sounds like things are going to go real well. And again, I encourage people, go to Kickstarter.com, support this project, and, you know, if you probably put out a print edition, you make some changes in it so it's not exactly the same as you got through Kickstarter. But it sounds like it's a fun book with a very unique perspective on things, and that's the kind of stuff that I love. I love variety, and this has got a lot of variety to it, so I'm very happy and very, you know, interested in reading it when it comes out.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's just been a joy to do. And, you know, people like yourself have just been excited about it. It being the first thing that people have been roundly excited about, I'll do everything within my power to make sure you've got it in your hands come end of July.
Sounds terrific. Well, much success, Brett.
Thank you. And it's been a real pleasure to talk to you as well, Wayne.
Oh, same here.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. And that's a wrap for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have a very special interview for all of you cat lovers out there. You're going to be interested in hearing what we talk about, so don't miss it. But until then, keep reading your comics.